But then you're living in Sand Springs.
Right.
And you went to Sand Springs High School.
Now I call it Charles Page High School, but it was called Sand Springs High School at that time.
It's in here then you have your first flying lesson.
Yes.
That's when your father said,
no more.
No more. However, did you obey him?
Yes, I did. But once I got the... He finally changed his mind. He never did fly. He never did fly in an airplane. But he would come to my air shows when I was on the Thunderbirds. If I was within 100 miles, he'd drive out and watch the show.
In Sand Springs High School, what was your major interest?
Math. Mathematics. And we had excellent teachers in Sand Springs.
Remember the names of some of those people?
Oh, yes. Ruth Hatch was my English teacher and literature teacher. My chemistry teacher was named Rowe, R-O-W-E. She was really a bright person. All of them.
Math came real easy for you.
Well, yes. I enjoyed it. As a matter of fact, Ruth Hatch, my English teacher, was so good that when I went to college, the level of instruction was such that I had already done it all.
What year did you graduate?
47.
1947. We should also point out that something happened, great honor for you, in Sand Springs in 1974.
Right.
When they named their airport after you.
Yeah, and I didn't have to die to do it. You know, most of them are named for people that have died. So that was a bonus.
Yeah. So then you're on to college.
Right.
And where did you go to school?
I went to Oklahoma Baptist University, OBU, at Shawnee.
What was your intention? What did you think you wanted to be?
I wanted to be a school teacher.
Your parents, obviously, had influenced that.
Yes.
Probably a math teacher, right?
Yeah. Math and physics.
What happens then?
What happened was, in 1950, the North Koreans came across the 38th parallel, headed south, with the intent of subjugating South Korea. MacArthur messed up their plans. It's a long story, but I was at OBU, and I was getting ready for my last year. I had gone to summer schools and gotten a lot of extra credits so that I could finish at the end of the first term. And so I can remember in June, I heard that the Air Force had reopened the aviation cadet program to train pilots. So I went down to the recruiting office at Shawnee and asked them what I could do to get in this program. And they said, well, we'll take you over to Oklahoma City. They'll give you a physical and they'll give you a test. If you pass it all, and then they had sort of an interview. I went over there and I took the physical and passed the physical. They started asking me technical questions and I started answering those. By the time we got back to Shawnee, they said, now, we don't know when you'll be called up. But you'll be called up. You've passed everything. And they started drafting. Shawnee started drafting people out of the college. So I almost panicked. I went back to the recruiting office, even though I heard awful stories about recruiting officers not being exactly honest, but they were honest. I said, what can I do? He said, you can enlist. And I said, well, what about my flying school? He said, that will take precedence. He said, they'll probably put you in a tech school if you finish basic training. But when your time comes up to enter a flying school class, that all goes away. They'll reassign you to an airbase where you'll be taught to fly. They were absolutely correct. I went halfway through this tech school. It was divided into two halves. And it made me a class leader because I had the most education. It worked out just fine.
Then your assignment was what?
They assigned me to Bartow, Florida. It was a contract school. Most all of those primary bases were contracted. And most of them were pilots in World War II. Had combat experience and everything. I had a really good instructor. When I finished that first 6 months, they gave us check rides. And of course, I wanted to go to fighter aircraft. So I had done a lot of hard work. A lot of people would just go up and bore holes in the sky. And I'd go up and do aerobatics, you know, just trying to develop skills. So when I took my check ride, this guy took the plane away from me and said, you don't need any more. I don't need to see anything else. He says, I'm going to send you to fighters. I said, great. That's how I was assigned from Bartow, Florida to Bryan, Texas, right there by Texas A&M.
You would have been on a course to be a teacher had it not been for the Korean War.
That's correct.
And that's what got you into flying.
That's right.
You earn your wings and your office commission in 1952.
Right.
And then you finally come to Korea in 1953. Tell us who you're attached to and what's happening there in Korea for you.
They put me in fighter bombers. So we did a lot of dive bombing. As I say, I think I must have blown up more rice paddies than anybody else in Korea. But it was actually pretty exciting. They had good anti-aircraft, the North Koreans. In fact, they were U.S. designed quad 90s, they call them, positioned with 490-millimeter guns. They were very accurate, radar control heavy, as they called them. I was up on a mission one day. We had pulled off of the target. I was just climbing up through about 12,000 feet. That's just about when the heavies become useful, the 90 millimeters, flak. All of a sudden, looking straight in, I saw this big flak burst right in my line. And then I saw another flak burst, and it was fire four rounds in short succession. Only thing I remember is I counted two flak bursts, and then it looked like the next one was going to nail me, except it didn't go off. I looked in the rearview mirror, and there was one big burst right behind me. That's when I really got scared, and I started doing evasive maneuvers to destroy the radar solution. But they didn't fire anymore. One guy was on my wing, and they called me Wiley, and said, Wiley, the heavy is all over you. And I said, tell me something I don't know.
Why did they call you Wiley?
Well, that's interesting. I wanted a desk because I had enrolled in a plastics course at USAFI, U.S. Air Force University or something. It was a correspondence course. I would mail them lessons in and then mail me in another one. But I wanted a desk. So I found a piece of 4x8 mahogany, quarter inch. So I started work designing this desk. I had some grid paper, and I had been designing this thing on the grid paper. Four of my buddies liked to play bridge, so they were playing bridge while I was cutting on this wood and starting to put the thing together. When I got through, I had one little scrap of wood left. And so some of the guys that had been watching me said, boy, that really worked out nice. And he said, it's really lucky that that worked out so good. And so these guys at the Pentagon Bridge says, it's not luck when you design it. Said, that was really Wiley. So they gave me the name Wiley Coyote. I used that desk the whole time I was there.
When you were there in Korea?
Yeah.
How many missions did you fly?
43.
And the kind of targets that you were given to shoot?
Any moving stock, any vehicles, trains, trucks, we'd go after them with a vengeance. Mostly, we'd go in and we'd dive bomb first. If you had some good targets, then you could strafe, shoot the machine guns. We had four machine guns, 50 caliber. That one time was the closest I ever got to getting hit. That flak just barely missed me. You could only bomb a bridge if you were briefed to do it. Otherwise, they'd threaten you with a court-martial.
Some bridges they would want to use themselves.
Yes.
And others they didn't need.
Yes. But the trains were fair game.
So when you say dive bomb, what did that mean?
You go into a dive, and the way this thing was designed is you would push forward on a stick and put the pepper, the sight, on the target. And you keep moving forward on the stick. That progressively put you into a dive. Now, when you got to about one-half G, then the bombs would automatically release. Or you could also pull the release. We did pretty well with the dive bombing, but we tried bombing earthen dams, and that did not work out very well at all. It's almost like it's a plastic. We'd bomb dams, we'd run trains. We caught one train. What they would do is they would drive the trains at night, and then before it got light, they would take the engine and put it into a cave. We caught this one. An F-80 photo reconnaissance pilot called in a train out in the open during the day. Well, I'd never seen that, especially with the engine on it, because they would take the engine and put the engine in the cave, or a tunnel, really. Then they'd leave the rest of the boxcars exposed. We would go after them, too. I can remember I was lined up on this boxcar, and I was going to strafe it. So I started firing, and it looked like the bullets were going out and turning around and coming back. Well, see, they overran our positions during the early part of the war, and they had an awful lot of our machine guns, also the ammo. Then I suddenly realized that somebody down there on a train didn't like it. He was firing away at me, water hosing me, because there was no deflection at all. I mean, they were just firing straight at me. But I broke off that run, and I don't know how in the world I kept from getting hit. It was just like bullets all around me. As soon as I disengaged, I climbed up to about 10,000 feet. I put it into a dive, and I strafed that train for about a five-second burst with armor-piercing incendiary. And, of course, I could see him hitting because it's like little sparklers going off. I pulled off of that and then went and did something else. And what was really strange was I flew three missions that day. So the second mission, we came back, that train was still burning. And that had been about an hour and a half or 2 hours. They had wooden floors. That's what was burning. Anyway, that was about the most exciting day I had.
They were out to kill you. Was that an issue in your mind? You knew that you were killing people in these trucks and trains and so forth. Did you have to work through that?
No.
Because it was war. They were out to get you. So that was not an issue. Did you experience the post-traumatic stress disorder that we talk about today?
Yeah, that day I flew three missions. By the end of the day, it was dusk, and we were flying along there out over the Sea of Japan just to get out of the way of any artillery or whatever else. They couldn't reach us out over the water. I was flying along. We were about 25,000 feet, and all of a sudden, I got this blast of cold air, and the canopy rolled back. I didn't know what in the world was going on, so I reached up and I closed the canopy, and strangely enough, it closed. But this gave me such a start that when I got back to the barracks, I got my correspondence course out to do some studying, and I couldn't concentrate. I kept reliving this shock that I experienced. I had never had a drink of hard liquor. But I thought, well, when a guy got shot down, the first thing they did, they get all this stuff together to send back to the survivors. Then they would take all of their whiskey, booze, to the bar in the barracks, and it was free game. So I remember I kept seeing these red balls coming at me. I didn't like that at all. So I had poured a water glass about half full of, I think it was bourbon. I started sipping on that. And the more I sipped, the better I felt. We had canvas cots with air mattresses in them. Of course, we had to have a mosquito net all around it. I started feeling pretty relaxed. I got into the cot, and I was on top of this air mattress, and then I experienced a drunk. I was drunk, that's what it was. So I just went to sleep. And when I woke up, I was fine. But boy, that was a bad evening.